number 10 is from the Interim Director of Employee Benefits, requesting amendment to section 201.24-82.2 of the Code of General Ordinances as it pertains to membership on the pension board. This is also going to the personnel and pension study. And we have an amendment. We have an amendment that we will be passing out.
Okay, please introduce yourselves.
Chairman, Supervisors, I'm Matt Hanchek. I'm the Interim Director of Employee Benefits. With me is Mark Grady from Corporation Counsel. Just a brief introduction. The item before you is what I would classify as a policy change with regards to the voting procedures for the pension board rules, as well as some general housekeeping items with the pension board. We're effectively seeking to address three things. One is a very strong potential conflict of interest where we would have the potential for ERS staff members serving on the pension board that directs their work. That creates some clear conflicts of interest between staff and management, staff and co-workers, and also calls into question the integrity of some of the votes that would come before that committee. The other item within this is the general turnover and vacancies in the pension board and some of the issues that is caused with the voting procedures. The pension board has a voting requirement of a majority of all members to take any action, basically a five affirmative votes to pass any measure, do any business, which is a bit different than the rules that govern the county board, for example, where it's a little bit closer to a majority of the members present. With operating at significant numbers of vacancies within the board, as well as just some attendance issues and schedule conflicts, we frequently have a issue with minimum quorum on the pension board in attendance requiring a unanimous vote, where the board gets gridlocked at a 4-1 vote frequently. I'm trying to pass measures. Most recently, the example of it would be the failure to adopt a pension an ERS system annual budget in a timely manner. This is basically a suggestion to make the voting procedures more like that of the county board, requiring a minimum of 4 affirmative votes, but a majority of the votes present. And then the last item in this was the definition of some of the term limits, dealing with partial terms and the ability of members to serve beyond the extent of their term while we're waiting to fill a vacancy. Basically, what it would do is it would apply full terms for the term limit, but it would require the, once the term limit is over or once the term limits have been reached, require the member to stop serving on the board.
Okay. Supervisor DeBruin, followed by Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to move approval, but I'm considering asking for separate action on the decision vote items, which would be lines 106 through 109, and I do want to just briefly talk to you about that. But before we get to that, some of the provisions, particularly the one, let me just make it clear. I don't know who's running for the board right now. There's elections right now. I haven't voted for anyone. I'm not endorsing anyone. I'm not supporting anyone. And I know there's politics in all these types of elections, but I do strongly support the changes on lines 90 to 91, where employees who work for the employee retirement system are not eligible to serve on the pension board. That's like asking Mr. Hare, who's our lead auditor, to serve on the audit committee. You can't have the hen watching the hen house. I mean, there is a direct conflict of interest there. And so I do strongly support that. I'm not quite as clear about the real impact of the midterm pieces, but I can support you on that. The part that I have a concern, though, is there's 9 members who are supposed to be on a pension board, and if you can't even get 5 or 6 members there at a meeting, I'm not so sure the remedy is to reduce the requirement of the vote minimums. I think the remedy is if members can't attend, 80% of the time, or if they miss 2 or 3 meetings a row, they're kicked off the pension board. A lot of voluntary boards have issues with attendance, But this is scary, the idea that a pension board, which is supposed to sign off on pension matters for a government with both of our size, with our size of retirees, to not have 50% of them show, or just 50, you know, just over 50% show. So I'm wondering whether you considered, instead of language like this, which would allow it to be 4 votes, which isn't even a majority of 9, to make a decision, because that means the very next cycle where you'd meet again, you could have 9 people there and they could undo the votes of those 4, whether you looked at the idea of requiring attendance as a minimum qualification to serve on the board as another option.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I think I can address it as well, or perhaps better than Mr. Hanchek. A couple of comments. First of all, it's never going to be less than a majority of those present. So if 9 people are present, 5 people have to support any vote.
Mm-hmm.
What I would say to you is that the pension board has had imposed on it a rather unusual voting requirement that doesn't apply to any other body that I know of in the county. And the example I would give you is the county board. Assuming 19 members, if all 19 are present, you need 10 votes to pass something. But if 16 are present on any given day, you don't need 10 votes. You only need 9. You need a majority of those present. If for some reason 15 were there, you would only need 8. That's not been true of the pension board. Since it's been composed of 9 members, it requires 5 votes, no matter how many show up. So if 7 show up, it takes 5. If 6 show up, it takes 5. If 5 show up, it takes 5. And so if we went to the rule that the county board uses, it would actually could potentially be 3. Because if 5 people show up, that's enough for a quorum, and a majority is 3. So we could theoretically have a 3-2 vote. We didn't go that far because we didn't think it was appropriate. What we drafted was a majority, but no less than 4. So if you have 5 there, a 4-1 vote is sufficient. If you have 6 there, a 4-2 vote is sufficient. If you have 7 there, a 4-3 vote is sufficient. If you have 8 there, it requires 5-3. If you have 9 there, it requires 5-4. So it's a middle ground between the past practice of the pension board and the normal practice of most governmental bodies, including the county board. And so you could make the argument that the pension board makes decisions that should have all 5 or at least 5 votes, but I would argue the same thing as would be true of the county board then. If that's true, county board makes significant decisions. Why shouldn't you always require 10 votes regardless of how many people are present? So it's a difference. It's a change. But it's actually not as substantial as it could be if we followed what I would call normal practice. With respect to the attendance issue, part of the problem is attendance. Part of the problem is just vacancies in positions that have not yet been filled or are being filled by the county exec, 1 or 2 this cycle, in fact. They are volunteer boards. We don't pay pension board members anything. The appointed members are paid nothing. The employee members get their pay, their county pay while they serve, but the appointed members from outside of the county get nothing. And so they have work conflicts, they have legitimate reasons to miss meetings. Now, that doesn't mean they should miss half the meetings. I'm not making that argument, but there are reasons for people to miss meetings. It's not like the personnel review board where they get, I don't know what the pay is, $1,000 or $2,000, whatever they get as pay for that service. But this board meets once a month. They have 2 committees that also meet once a month. And so it's a fair amount of time. It's probably a good 8 hours, not counting any time they spend studying materials, in meetings for people who have full-time jobs outside. So I agree with you that attendance is important, but I also want to be careful with volunteer boards so we not go too far. The voting requirement provision that Mr. Hanchek has proposed and that I drafted, I think, is a nice middle ground between what I would call the standard governmental practice and the past rules of the pension board.
Well, just to follow up, the county board, I've been here almost 20 years, and we've never had only half the members of the board show up for a county board meeting. So that analogy fails just in that, as far as I'm concerned, in that perspective, because in all fairness to the county board of supervisors, when we had 25 people, we never had a board meeting that had 12 people show. And we've never had, now when we've had 19, we've never had a board meeting where only 10 people show. And I guess if that was happening, I'd be equally concerned. But, and I recognize that it is a volunteer, but this is something people run for. It's a very important function. And if they can't clear their schedule, I serve on private boards. There's times where I haven't been able to come as much as I wanted. And I get that. And you know what happens if you don't show? You get a call saying, are you really interested or do you want to not, you know, come back next time? There has to be a demonstrated level of commitment, too. So I guess I'm still, the minimum of 4 votes I can get. But the fact that there's nothing in here that requires or has as a qualification to stay on some minimal level of attendance is a problem for me. So I would request to work with both of you before board day to think about whether or not, or to try and put together an amendment that would put in some sort of a minimum attendance requirement that would then kick in either going off of the board or a review by the pension board of their qualifications. For if someone, like someone who has a job and they legitimately missed enough meetings that it would kick it in. So I would hope to work, rather than take committee's time and your time in public session to do that, I look for an amendment before board day. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I still move approval.
Mr. Reed.
And I just would respond, I think Matt and I would both be happy to work with you on that. I think the key is where you draw that line, because 5 of the 9 members are private, you know, citizens. They're not employees or retirees. And so 5 of the 9 are people who are volunteering their time. And so, you know, is it how many meetings a year is it acceptable? Is it 2? Is it 4 to miss?
I'm sure so we'll have that discussion.
We can have that discussion. But I think that's a perfectly, because it has been something the pension board has talked about. And in the theoretical idea is that if another member misses enough meetings, the pension board could, in fact, try to persuade someone, obviously, to attend. But worst case scenario would be the pension board could go to court and ask that a trustee be removed for failure to come to enough meetings. But we've never had that. But having a bright line rule in an ordinance, you know, would clarify the situation.
Okay. It was moved by Supervisor DeBruin. Supervisor Johnson, well, any questions? And as well as Supervisor Mayo. Yes.
I just procedurally, there was an amendment which you might want to move before you move the main motion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, why don't we?
Is that yours?
Yeah, that's mine.
Well, that worked out well. I got my stuff.
Yeah, you got
yours. Okay. Before, now I'm chairing the committee.
Can I speak to a couple of the points, just a little more detail in response on the main issue? The county board, when it changed the pension board from 7 members to 9 members back in early 2000s, imposed term limits on the members, a 2-3-year term limit on all members, but it left some ambiguities. So what if somebody is appointed or elected to fill the balance of, like, a 1-year balance of a 3-year term? Does that count towards the 2-term limits? We have said no, that it's 2 full terms that count, not partial terms. And so we're codifying our past practice or past interpretation on that. On the other hand, we've also had situations where someone fills their 2 full terms, they've served 6 years, but their replacement has not been appointed by the exec or the county board chairman. And the question is, can they continue to serve beyond their term limit while they wait for the replacement? Our practice has been to allow that, but we think that that's probably not the best practice. So this ordinance amendment, in fact, stops that, so that at the end of the term limit, you're done. There's no what we call holdover, and that will hopefully incentivize the appointing authority to appoint a replacement. We also had, there's a language in the initial paragraph with respect to the loss of qualifications. We have various qualifications. Elected employee members have to be employees. If during their term they retire, they've lost the qualification that got them elected, and so they should stop serving then. They no longer serve the employees. Likewise, appointed members have to be qualified for a variety of things, but can be disqualified if a member of their family is a member of the pension system. So you have a appointed member whose spouse or something starts working at the county and becomes a member of the system. They should, therefore, be immediately disqualified. And so the language basically says, if during your term you fail to continue to have the qualifications that you needed to have to get the position, you are off. So if you change status, you go from employment to retiree, you can no longer be an employee member. If you are an appointed member who had no disqualifications but now has some because a family member joins the pension system, or you join an investment bank that now does work with the pension system, that disqualifies you, so you should be removed as of that moment. And so the additional language here basically says you must continue to maintain the qualifications that you had when you got the position, and if you don't, then you should be off. And so that's what that additional language is. And I think, well, I guess my reaction is I don't know why anybody would be opposed to that. It's no different than somebody in an elected office living in their district, and if they move out of their district, they shouldn't really be serving that district.
You keep
anymore.
Comparing. Don't compare that. What a, stop comparing. Please, Madam Chair.
Okay.
You need to stop comparing us with that.
Okay.
It's totally different.
All right. Supervisor Thomas?
The item before us, I think, if everyone had an opportunity to look at it, what we're looking at is the third paragraph that's in bold letters.
Bottom of the first page,
and it continues on the top of the second page, and that's the additional language that's been added. If you can have an opportunity to look at that, and then I would move approval of the amendment.
I'm going to have the clerk read the amendment since people, members of the audience, may not have gotten this. Madam Clerk, will you read just the part of the amendment that is being changed? It starts at the bottom of the first page. No member.
Before we go to points A, B, and C, the wording that is going to be added is no member shall be eligible to serve or to continue serving on the pension board who has been found or determined by any Wisconsin governmental unit or agency to have violated any provision of an applicable ethics or a lobbying code, or who has been convicted of any crime of misconduct in office or any crime involving dishonesty or theft.
Thank you. Supervisor Johnson.
So, move forward, Madam Clerk.
Any questions or comments on the amendment? Supervisor Johnson.
Not on the amendment, Madam Chair.
Any other questions or comments on the amendment? Mm-hmm. Okay, there's a motion to approve the amendment by Supervisor Thomas. Please call the roll.
On the amendment, Supervisor Thomas.
Aye.
Mayo.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Cuomo West.
Aye.
And Madam Chair.
Aye.
Motion to approve the amendment, 6-0.
So the original motion to approve becomes a motion to approve as amended. Any further discussion on the item?
Madam Chair.
Supervisor Johnson and then Supervisor Mayo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had not, before the amendment was introduced, I want to ask a couple of questions.
Go ahead, Supervisor.
Mr. Hanchek, you said there's two vacancies now? There are two vacancies on the pension board? Four?
There's three.
Three. Okay.
Well, let me back up. There are three, the county executive has three appointments. They are all vacant. However, in this cycle, he is reappointing one member, appointing another member. So at the end of this cycle, there will only be one county executive vacancy. And there is an employee election about to occur as part of the standard election process.
Okay. Now, I understand, as I try to be busy, some look at this as what we do as a full-time, part-time job, full-time job. I believe service to the community is a full-time venture, besides what one has to do with respect to his or her family. But with respect to the five appointed people, and then the group of four elected people, which tend to be employees and a retiree, is there one group, or has history been that one group had, because of conflicts, tends not to make the meetings as opposed to another group? Or is it personalized? Is it that I, as Willie Johnson Jr., trustee, may have a conflict here, may have a conflict there, might make the meeting, might not make the meeting? What has been the trend, the history, as it relates to appointed trustees and elected trustees, if there is such?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. My reaction is that I don't know that there's a trend. We've had employees miss for reasons. We've had appointees miss for work reasons.
It seems there's a problem now, and what I'm getting at is, can you pinpoint what the problem is other than personalized, individualized schedules? Is it such that the appointees, because employees are going to be there because they're employees, and you know, they're kind of around as opposed to appointed people who have their own
I guess I would say that it's been both, Mr. Chairman and Supervisor, it's been both maybe a little bit more on the appointee side because of the conflicts of their work schedules.
Yes.
But we have also had employees who have missed meetings too. But
I'm just trying to understand. I'm just trying to understand how it's evolved. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Supervisor Mayo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One, I really do take offense that you're trying to compare the pension board with the county board. The pension board has been established for a number of years, and I was on the pension board. They work totally different, different type of body. Now, you have concerns about some of the issues, and I believe this issue right here is like a witch hunt right now. Because if you really want to get the nitty-gritty, the pension board have the right to ask from the chair to ask any member to be excused by attendance. The pension board also has the right to say, call them out right in the meeting, why you're not there. If you want to change something, change it for the best for the pension board. The pension board, within a little society, they can do whatever they want within that part. You also go to the appointing thing because they have term limits. So if they want to go back and say, hey, we have a problem with you, would you like to resign and we just ease on out? All the stuff what you're doing right here is bull. Second of all, when you turn around and talk about employees, you want employees to have a vested interest. Each employee have a vested interest in the pension anyway. If their spouse come on, you want to disqualify them. You had employees there who had family members and spouse work from Milwaukee County on the pension board. So I have a concern. I would like to lay this item over, because if you talk about another item, I know the young lady who's running that you say that you don't want to be a part of the pension board now because they work for I would like to know what the real reason. I would like to lay this over to the next cycle so I can get more information from you two exactly why we're doing all these changes all of a sudden, so we can have it for the next term when a new county exec comes, or the present county exec, when their term limits are in, because they stagger term limits, so everybody can be on board on the same issue. And I would like to lay this over to the next slide.
There's
Mr.
been
Chairman,
a motion.
If I could address one comment,
go ahead,
please.
Mr. Hanchin.
Madam Chair. Regarding the specific person currently running, that has, in my perspective, has absolutely nothing to do with the policy decision itself. I firmly stand behind the recommendation that ERS employees should not serve on the pension board governing ERS, regardless of who might be running. And frankly, I take a little bit of offense to any indication otherwise.
I stand by my words.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to speak to the other point that Supervisor Mayo made. When I was speaking of disqualification with spouses, that was for the appointed members, not the employee members. The employees can have their entire family working at the county. That's not an issue. It's the ordinance provides that members appointed by the exec and the county board chair from outside of the county can't have family members as members of the pension system. That's in the ordinance. That's what I just wanted to clarify.
That's why I want to have some clarification on a number of things what they're trying to do here.
Supervisor Thomas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I feel it's appropriate if the supervisor has some concerns. I don't think one cycle would be detrimental. We should allow supervisors to feel comfortable with this resolution before we move on. So I will be supporting this quite a bit.
Okay, there's a motion to lay over. Please call the roll.
Supervisors Thomas.
Aye.
Mayo.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Romulus.
Aye.
Madam Chair.
No.
Motion approved on layover 5-1.
Next item, Madam Clerk.